This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation pop experience. Welcome back to another fantastical episode of Bells with Books. It is the month of May, and of course, even in May, I'm still not alone and never will be. If I am, I don't know what happened. Of course, I am your host, Miranda, and I'm joined by my beautiful friend, Bianca.
Hello!
When you said the month of May, I thought you said Martha May, and I was like, Martha May who?
Martha May who?
I miss Christmas.
We get, no, ma'am, Halloween first, please.
Christmas has my heart. One of my playlists on Spotify is Christmas Isn't Just a Season.
And then one of mine on Spotify is Halloween is Year Around.
I love us.
I know, right?
Very black cat golden retriever over here.
What's funny though is I get told all the time, Miranda, you have some straight up golden retriever energy. And I'm like,
you really do.
I really do. My heart is very black though. Like, so what I think is what's funny is you're the opposite, because we've talked about the resting face that both of us can sometimes have. And you're like, I thought I made myself look not approachable. And I was like, I smile too much. But then when we talk about things, I'm dark on the inside. I'm very dark in there. And you're like, sunshines and rainbows. So I don't know what's going on.
We never know what's going on. This is why we keep an itinerary like pulled up in front of us, so we can try to stay on track for this.
Yes. And this is why we plan like months in advance.
We literally, before we started recording, y'all, we went through and we planned through October of this year.
I was going to say almost until the end of the year.
We got June, July, August, September, and October all mapped out for you guys. So this, you're welcome.
Honestly, the reason why, full transparency, is because, like, I was telling Bianca, I was like, oh, well, you know, we'll just kind of play it by ear, like, we'll kind of play it by ear, but here's my thoughts on October. And then I was like, nope, we're putting them down, because Bianca will be like, Miranda, what did you want to say again? And I'm like, I don't remember.
She texts me stuff all the time, and I'm like, put it in the doc. She's like, I will. And then I go in the doc, like, a week later, it's not there, and I'm like, I have no idea what she was talking about.
So, I can't. Okay, so here's the thing. So when I, for some reason, being over here in Europe, every time I try to access the doc on my phone, it's in a whole nother language and it's trying to get me to sign in and it won't let me sign in. And it's just a bloody mess, right? And I'm always, when I have these thoughts, I'm like not near like my computer or my iPad where I don't have a problem accessing the doc. For some reason, just my phone is like, just kidding, we're going to be in 5 different languages. And I'm like, I don't know what it says. It literally translates our doc. I'm like, I don't know what this says. So, like, I get all, like, frustrated. And you're like, put it in the doc. And I'm like, oh, I will. And then you're like, hey, what did you want to say? And I'm like, I don't know.
And then it's like a week's worth of text that you don't feel like scrolling through.
Or the one time that I actually made the note in the doc, and you're like, Miranda, what is this? And I'm like, couldn't tell you.
It was just a bunch of gibberish.
It was like words that made sense, but not together. It was like something reads why this works. And I was like, I don't know. So if any of you guys have ever wondered what an almost 40-year-old ADHD brain is, ta-da!
It's chaos.
It is absolute chaos.
Well, we do have some book news and social media updates for y'all. Number one, The Rag Picker King by Cassandra Clare is officially coming out. It is the sequel to Sword Catcher. It will be out next year, sometime in 2025. But I'm just glad that we have a title. Super excited for that.
Did you read the I can't remember. Did you read Swordcatcher yet?
I started it, but I could, this is going to sound weird. I could tell that I was going to love it. So I put it down because I knew there was going to be, I think this is a trilogy. So I wanted to wait till closer to time for the second book to come out.
No, that makes complete sense because it's like last month when we talked and I said I picked up a book and I loved it. And then I didn't know that it had literally just come out and it was the first in the series. So now I have to wait like a whole year and a half, 2 years for the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Like, what? Just wait. Like, just wait. Like, pretty much.
I read the first two chapters of Swordcatcher and I was like, this is going to be great. And I was like, oh, no, this is a brand new book. Let me put this down.
Just wait.
And then I'll let you do the next one since you're the one that discovered it.
I know I did. I was so excited. I just sometimes I get excited when I discover things first. most of you, I feel like, have the same taste as we do. So I feel like most of you were probably Twilight people. And if you weren't, stop lying to yourself. Yes, you were. everyone was. I was an adult and I was. Come on. But Stephenie Meyer has announced that she's writing two new Twilight books. Now, woo! I'm super excited about this. I did a little digging. I was trying to do some digging. There are theories that it's in the Twilight universe and it's same characters, but it's not Bella and Edward anymore.
Yes, there's an article on Book Riot. It was published February 9th of actually last year.
Mm-hmm.
Not even this year, so I don't know why, like, it's just now gaining traction. But back in February of last year, she actually said that she had an outline done for the two books, and she's already written a few chapters. And that was last year, so I imagine by this time, she has much more done.
Yeah, it was the same thing. I saw that that article was old, and I was like, wait, why are we just not talking about it? But literally, it just came out, like, this week. And I was like, oh, okay. Like... And how I missed that article last year, I don't know, because I feel like I would have been like, did you see this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. And I have some, there were some comment theories that they think they know who it is. All I'll say is, if that's what we're doing, please no.
does it involve a certain swamp mythical creature daughter?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to go down that route.
I don't want to go down that route either. I don't want to go down that route.
I'm really hoping that we get a Volturi, like, side quest book. I would love to learn more about the Volturi. I wouldn't be too mad about a werewolf book, it wouldn't be my first choice.
And I would even be okay if it were a werewolf Jacob actually finding his love, because I know all these people want so badly for it to be swamp creature, but that's just gross. And I think you can have a tie to people and it not be romantic, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
You could have like a, what was it they called it? Their connection had an actual term. Anyway, I think you can have that and it not be like, it can be like platonic and just like deep love, like a mother and child love kind of thing, or, you know. So I think if it is a werewolf, I would like to maybe see it be Jacob actually find his, who he's meant to be with. But I don't know. I'm with you, Volturi. Maybe. Or maybe it's supposed to be characters we already know. So I don't know what story I could get from that. It just better not be what. No. Mm-mm.
Yeah. But moving on. Silvia Moreno Garcia, the author of Mexican Gothic, has her next book coming out this August. It's going to be called The Seventh Veil of Salome. I saw a little like book trailer for it. Looks amazing. I will probably be picking that up.
Which I like that new thing that we've done in the last few years where we're making trailers for books, like we make trailers for movies.
Yes.
I find that like really appealing from a, you know, sales standpoint, basically, from like a trying to grasp attention kind of thing. I think it's fantastic.
Well, I think that's something good that came out of the 2020 lockdowns. Books became popular again, and I think they became so popular because movies weren't like coming out.
No,
like, all production and stuff was paused on like TV shows and movies and such. So I think some of that energy was put into the publishing industry, and that makes me super happy.
Oh, for sure. So with that, kind of with the lockdown, it kind of goes into what I wanted to tell everybody about. A lot more people were also listening to like podcasts and audiobooks. And there's been an update on Audible. And I thought it was really, really kind of cool, but I wanted to like tell people. So I know not everyone here is that listens to us. Well, I'd say from the comments we've got, we're probably 50-50 with people being like, yes, Spicy Miranda. And then the other half are probably Bianca No-Nos, I would say. So,
well, that's good. We're catering to a large audience.
We're kind of given both aspects. But they've had an update, and apparently, so you know, if you are a Yes Miranda, then you will need to go into your app, or I think even on just the web page, into your account, and you will need to untick mark a little box that says hide explicit content. So if you want spicy in your life, then you'll need to go make sure that that is not checked mark and is not hiding your content. If you don't want spicy in your life, which not everyone does, and I understand that, and you check mark that, it will hide content that is considered spicy, explicit, Bianca No-Nos, so that if that's not for you, and that's okay, like it just removes that from the possibility of you getting a book that you're like, I did not want this. So that's kind of neat, but if you want it, it might be hidden. So go check.
Oh, I appreciate that that's even an option, because I feel like Goodreads has gotten kind of bad about this. It doesn't explicitly say anymore, like, if it's spicy or not. You kind of have to dig into the reviews of people
and then see if it is. Sometimes.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm also not of the realm that, like, oh, I like spicy content, but I'm also not part of this new genre of reader that they're like, it doesn't have spice. Like, I'm not. So I think giving people options and not yucking someone's yum if they don't want that in their life is what we should be doing. So I think it's actually a very good marketing thing for Audible to realize that they have probably a large majority of listeners that don't want that. Yeah. And don't want, like, I can guarantee you they probably have a lot of returns where people are like, this had explicit sex in it and I did not want that. So, I mean, that's a really good, smart idea. So for them, they probably save a lot of money with people not returning books because, you know.
Yeah.
They have a pretty good return policy, too, if you ever come across something that you're like, this was just not for me. So.
That's cool.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
By all means.
Hugo. Well, I was going to transition to our next segment.
Me too, actually.
Our next segment, Adaptation Minute. Project Hail Mary has officially got a movie release set for March of 2026. And everyone's favorite leading man right now, Ryan Gosling, has been cast as the main character.
I love his resurgence.
I have my villain fingers going right now. This makes me so happy because Project Hail Mary was one of my favorite reads. I think it was last year, the year before. I don't remember when I read it, but it was so good.
Year before, I think.
It might have been year before.
I think it was year before.
But it was so good. So I'm very excited for this. And I think Ryan Gosling is...
year, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
But Ryan Gosling, literally, that was who I pictured as the main character, so that is perfect casting.
He's fantastic in general. I think he's a great actor, and like I said, his resurgence of stardom is well deserved and fascinating.
And then we have some sad news. Hulu did not renew the option for adaptation for Mexican Gothic. That broke my heart, because Mexican Gothic, it deserves it. It needs an adaptation. So I need another service company, something to pick this up.
I was about to say, that doesn't mean that it won't happen, though, because we saw that, for example, a current adaptation that's out that I forgot to add to the list, but this just made me think of it, the Spiderwick Chronicles. I remember it was supposed to be released by one streaming service, and Tony DiTerlizzi, one of the, you know, creators of Spiderwick, like they had done everything. Like it was going to happen. It was casted. It was everything. And then they were like, I think they'd even like shot like part of the, and they were like, nope, we're not doing this anymore. And Tony was crushed. And then another streaming service picked it up, and we've had some of our, you and I have had some of our friends watching it saying like how great it is. And Tony's wife, Angela, has been just like hyping it up here lately. So fingers crossed that someone sees the potential that Mexican Gothic is and says, you know what? We'll take it. Come on, Netflix. I'm talking to you. You'll take it. Won't you? Amazon. One of you, like,
I need Amazon to get on. I think Amazon would be a perfect place for it.
I agree. I think, but I have, thinking of the, I haven't read Mexican Gothic, but you explained a lot of it to me, and I still plan to read it. So watching like some of the Guillermo del Toro stuff that was done on Netflix, I feel like they potentially could do it very well also.
That's a good point.
But Amazon has done some things like Lore and other, my brain just went dead on the one that, anyway, there's been some other really good productions by Netflix that I think they could handle it as well. So get on it, guys.
We also officially have a release date for It Ends With Us. Woo-hoo! It will be in theaters August 9th. So it may very well be, if my theater has a 10 o'clock showing on August 8th, my butt will be sat in that chair.
If I can find someone to go with me, I will. But we don't always get the same opening night days that you guys do. It's always like right there, but it's not like the same day. So we may not get it for a few days past that. But my plan is to go as well. If I have to go to like a matinee and go alone, I'll go.
Well, and this movie has literally been in the works from like storyboarding and crafting and writing the script for like 10 years now, ever since basically the book came out.
Oh my God. Has the book been out that long?
I think it has. Let me double check. Jesus. It ends with, can I type? Do, 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 do. 2016. So it's been 8 years.
Oh God.
I was close.
I've been a minute. Wow.
So, yeah. Like, pretty much since the book was published, it has been...
I do remember it was pretty quickly after being published. Like, it was almost immediate after being published, if I remember the news correctly.
Yeah.
That it was optioned. It wasn't not adapted, but optioned.
Which we do have... I don't have this on the sheet we're looking at, Miranda, but they've officially started working on the script for Verity as well at Amazon. So
I just saw that. I forgot about that. And that one, whoo, that's gonna be
That's gonna be huge.
If they do everything that we know takes place in that book, like if they do this doesn't spoil the book for anyone that still hasn't read it, but if they do the quote unquote book parts as they're being read as literal flashbacks.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be rough.
Well, that, and I'm pretty sure if they keep it true, it's going to have to be rated R.
Oh, it's going to definitely be rated R.
Like, I'm surprised It Ends With Us isn't rated R.
I didn't realize it wasn't.
Last I saw, they were trying to keep it PG-13.
I wonder if maybe there's just a lot that's insinuated that we got on page, but we're not getting on screen so that they can keep it PG-13.
Maybe. But it also hasn't been officially, quote, I keep saying that, released what the rating is. But
okay.
That was the last thing I saw.
We might not get final rating just yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Stay tuned. If we get an update on rating, we will let you know.
And then one last thing for Adaptation Minute is I started watching Three Body Problem on Netflix. I started it last night, actually. Brad and I watched the first episode.
And did you see what I mean? Like, you have to pay attention. Like,
it was out there.
Oh my, yes. And I'm still vested. Like, we actually took a break from it because Jerry and I were both like, you have to pay. Like, if your eyes go away from the screen for just a few minutes or seconds, like, you can
miss
something.
You're going to miss stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not a play on your phone. This is, and I'm not being like rude because I'm a play on your phone person. So like we're also watching like Bad Batch and, you know, the last Mandalorian season that we hadn't finished and stuff like that. You can kind of play on your phone during those shows, but you're still fully invested. Yeah. You cannot on Three Body Problem. So we have actually taken a small break, but just because of how invested you have to be to watch an episode.
Yeah,
it's a lot. So, it's a lot.
But with that being said, those two segments are kind of short because we have quite a bit of stuff to cover in our main segment.
Yes.
This month, we chose to cover biographies. It was something we hadn't covered on the podcast before, and Miranda and I both had some biographies that we wanted to read, so kind of killing two birds with one stone.
Wasn't it in the month of May? It's like biography something day or something?
Oh, is it? I don't know.
I thought that was one of the reasons why we did it.
Don't ask me questions.
Listen, what are you doing to me? Yes, National Biographers Day is celebrated every year on May 16th. Yes.
Well, there's your fun fact for the day.
May 16th is National Biographers Day. It was the first time, actually, Samuel Johnson, a poet, essayist, literary critic, editor, and lexicographer?
What's a lexicographer?
I don't know. We go on Google. I'm probably saying that wrong. But apparently it was the day that he and his biographer met. And so somehow that turned...
That means he wrote dictionaries.
Oh! Well.
So lexicography is the practice of compiling dictionaries.
I did not know this. And all of the stuff I've ever researched, I did not know this. So it says, according to Johnson, the best biographers ate, drank, and maintained social relations with the person they were writing about. So this is a day dedicated to celebrating biographers who put painstaking effort into pinning down someone's life in such a way that is able to strike a chord with its readers. Mine is an autobiography about a very specific time in a person's life, and yours is a biography written about someone else. Correct?
Yes.
Fantastic. Normally, I say you go first. Today, I'm going to go first because I don't have a whole lot to say, and it's not because it wasn't a good book. It's just because there's only so much you can say about my book today. And I know you texted me, and you were like, I got 4 pages of notes, and I'm only on chapter 3. And I was like, oh, God.
I think, hold on, let me pull it up. I have how many pages? I have 11 pages.
Yeah, I think I sent you the emoji with the person doing the really big eyes, which is me, like, 24/7. So I was like, what? Yes.
So yes, you go first, Miranda.
I'm going to go first today. I chose to read Surviving to Drive, A Year Inside Formula One by Gunther Steiner, because I love Gunther. He's a character. He's quite a character. And Bianca told me she would probably ask questions. So I am prepared for you to ask questions. Gunther Steiner was the former principal of the Haas F1 team. He is no longer the principal. And currently, as of this podcast and just this week, has announced he is suing Haas. Good for you, Gunther. You deserve it.
Okay.
He was fired at the end of last season, so he is not a current principal. He's actually been doing some commentator stuff, and we love it. Gunther is actually Italian, but he speaks German, English, Italian, and I think another language. And his accent is very heavy, like German, Austrian. And my favorite is when he's on Drive to Survive, if anyone has watched it on Netflix, he's always like, well, shit, Gene. Well, shit, Gene. And he drops some, he likes to curse like Miranda does. And my favorite thing is line one is, It probably won't surprise many people that I'm starting my book with a swear word, but all I can say is thank fuck that season is over. And it's spelled F-O-K. this covers an entire year of F1 through Gunther's eyes as the principal of the Haas team. We literally start in the off season of 2021, December of 2021. So this is them coming out of pandemic, which was basically them not being able to have races at all. And it goes all the way up to our season finale in Abu Dhabi of November of 22 at Yas Marina Circuit. Most of this I was familiar with, but it went into a lot more. It talked about some of the crashes that happened, it talks about Mick Schumacher. I know you're like, I don't know who that is.
I had no clue who these people are.
Yeah, he's a race car driver. We also have there's some stuff that happened in here because one of their drivers was a Russian oligarch's son. And clearly when the Ukraine war kicked off, they were like, we might be boycotted. We're really sorry, but you and your father's money have to go. So it kind of talks through that. There's some really cool pictures in the middle. Reading this from Gunther's standpoint, because for anyone that's ever watched Drive to Survive, because I know a lot of people have watched it, but they don't really watch Formula One. They don't cover in full depth every team. So to give you a little bit of perspective, Bianca, in Formula One, there are 20 drivers, 10 teams. Each team has two drivers. So when they're doing the Drive to Survive show, usually it's only 10 episodes. And like each episode, like this past season, the way they did it is each episode focused on one time they were focusing on Ferrari, one time they were focusing on Haas. But even just one episode doesn't give you enough that like a full book would for a whole season, right? So it was really interesting to see him break down. He literally breaks down like every single thing that happened. It's written kind of like a diary in the sense that like you'll flip to a page and like this one, for example, it's Friday, 20 May, 2022, Circuit de Barcelona, Barcelona, Spain, 4 p.m. And it goes through and then it's like 5 p.m., 10 a.m., on the 22nd. So it's very interesting. It gives you a really good insight into Gunther, what he was dealing with. Originally, when he did this, he was like, whew, and he also narrated his own book, which is hysterical, because just the way the cadence of his speech, he's just a really funny guy. He's one of those, like, says what he thinks people, and he's very personable. So people watching Drive to Survive like really kind of fell in love with him. And everybody kept saying, you should write a book, Gunther, you should write a book. And he was like, no. And then he did. And he was like, oh my God, that was so stressful. That was so much work. I will never do this again. And then just a few weeks ago with all the mess of Haas, because also when he left Haas, he didn't leave willingly at the end of last season. And it wasn't, I think we still had a couple of races left of last season too, when he was let go. So he came out a couple of weeks after Haas letting him go and said, you know what? I am coming back. Book two, baby. So essentially he's going to write another book and it's going to be a tell-all of all of the
bull. He's going to spill the tea.
Oh, he's spilling the tea. He's been spilling the tea. As I said, as of this week, he has come out and said that he will be suing. He is suing Haas, which is the team that he worked for. And the reason he is suing them is one of the reasons is they continue to use his likeness. I think there's been a few ads and stuff that still have him in them. And he's not he technically doesn't work for them. And then there were actually commissions that he was owed because he had some sort of stake or profit in the team, and he was never given those. And they cut ties with him. So it's not like he left them and said peace, but they cut his ties with them. So, and honestly, a lot of times when a principal is let go in Formula One, and a principal, by the way, an F1 principal is kind of like essentially a coach. It's like for NFL has like a team coach, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be the best way to describe it to someone that doesn't know Formula One is like, imagine he's the coach. So he's the person that makes sure everything is running smooth, that the driver is doing what they're supposed to, that the maintenance is doing what they're supposed to. They're still an owner and they're still investors, but they are the person that, like, if anything goes wrong, they will take the blame for it. So that was his job at Haas. And were they doing great? No, not really. They're not one of the top tier teams on the grid, but when you have 10 teams, you're always going to have people that are going to be mid pack and lower pack, and you're going to have your top tiers. So unfortunately, and in my opinion, don't come for me, F1 fans, but the owner of Haas, he's the problem, not Gunther. Gunther is a treasure. I love Gunther. Haas is actually not my Formula One team though, but yeah, they're, it's really cool, though. The back of Gunther's book actually says people talk about football managers being under pressure. Trust me, that's nothing. Pressure is watching one of your drivers hit a barrier at 190 miles per hour and exploding before your eyes.
That's a lot.
It is a very dangerous sport. It is a very dangerous sport. There are some crashes that... One in particular I watched that I thought for sure the man was dead. And somehow he is not. He is not. But after that crash, him and his wife decided together that he would be leaving F1. He still races, but not in such a terrifying capacity, I guess is what I can say. He races I think he's an IndyCar now, which they wreck too, but you don't hear of such horrific wrecks in IndyCar. And somebody's probably going to be like, I'm an IndyCar fan. Yeah, they're bad. You're probably right. They're probably bad, but this one was bad. This one was real bad. You know it's bad when literally every driver stops and is like staring and almost crying because they think, oh my God, this person is dead.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you want a funny character who's a real person, and you want a look inside Formula One, maybe you've been kind of interested. I highly recommend reading Gunther's book. Again, it's the breakdown of like his team specifically, but it does go over the entirety of the 22 season. It's kind of like a unobstructed behind the scenes view through Gunther's lens of what kind of like happens in high stakes motor racing. But like a kind of any fictional book, it's not fictional, but like a fictional book, it's got like twists and turns from like hiring and firing of drivers, balancing books, preseason preparations, design, launching and testing of the car. Of course, the race calendar itself was just pretty intense. And this is actually the first time that an F1 team has ever allowed an acting principal to tell the whole story, because when this book came out, he still was actively working as the acting principal for Haas. And honestly, with Drive to Survive coming to Netflix, this is really the first time that people have really gotten a look into F1, which as an F1 fan, I think has been fantastic because it's brought a lot of fans to the motorsport that honestly, I forget the numbers, but they said prior to Drive to Survive, like this is how many people were fans of the sport, and now this is how many more. And the amount of money that it has brought to the sport. And like, for example, we now have races in Miami, COTA in Texas, Vegas. We now have a Vegas race. So bringing it into the United States, because it was predominantly a European thing in years prior to. has been pretty fantastic. So, yeah. Check it out. If you're an F1 fan, message me. Tell me who your team is. I will only accept the answer as Red Bull or Ferrari. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. And yes, for anybody wondering,
Max Verstappen.
If you know, you know. There's okay. a whole song. I'll send it to you. So Max Verstappen is like the number one heat right now. And there's this song that someone on the internet made. And it's like almost like a dance club song. And it's like,
Max Verstappen.
Like over and over again.
It sounds like an old jingle from like the late 90s for a commercial.
It is, but this is more of like when you hear it, it's more like a I'm going to the club kind of song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he is your current champion. I do like Max Verstappen, but I also am a real Carlos Sainz smooth operator girl. So, yeah. So that's enough about Gunther Steiner and Surviving to Drive, a year inside Formula One. I hope you pick it up. I hope you enjoy it. I think even if you're not a sports fan, it might be a cool read. So, and then I consider it an autobiography because it's about him and his team and what he was doing. So, yay. I was like, I don't know what else to say.
Good job, Miranda.
Thank you.
So the book that I'm covering this month was born out of pop culture. My mother, Taylor Swift, put out a new album 2 weeks ago. It's been a fortnight.
Sorry.
It has been a fortnight. And one of her songs is titled Clarabeau. And I was like, who is Clarabeau? I knew that she was an actress back in the silent film era, but that was all I knew.
I didn't even know that until you told me.
Yeah, that was literally the only thing I knew about her. I did not know any of her movies. I didn't know her life story, obviously. So I was like, I want to do some research. And I found, like, the book I chose is called Clarabeau Running Wild by David Sten. And this is widely considered to be, like, the biography about Clarabeau. And I can tell why after reading it. There are a few others, but this one was... From my research, this is the one considered to be, quote, it. Okay. And that is a play on words because Clara is considered to be the first it girl. And that saying comes from Clara playing in a movie called It. And she was literally the it girl. And that is where the phrase came from. So it all stems from Clara.
Boy, could you imagine looking up the movie It, thinking you're getting something else, and you come across this one, or vice versa?
Yeah. the book is broken up into not only parts, but chapters as well. There are 6 parts to the book, and then within those parts are the different chapters. So the first part is called Brooklyn Gothic. Sorry, if you hear Babe, she wants attention.
Hey, Babe.
like I said, I do have 11 pages of notes. I'm going to try to condense this because otherwise we will be here for literal hours. Babe, if you don't hush. You want to talk to the people? Okay. So. Where was I? So part one, Brooklyn Gothic. The book actually opens by going over her parents and their life stories because their beginnings, it says a lot about what Clara endured both in childhood and for the rest of her life with her father. The book actually opens with this quote from Clara, "Nobody wanted me to be born in the first place." She seemed to say it without any self-pity, and her parents were Robert and Sarah Beau. Robert was the last of 13 children, and he wasn't even 2 years old when his mother died. He was a small man in both mind and body, who many thought he was mentally retarded. He was kind of ostracized from society. He just gave everyone basically like the ick or the creepy crawlies. People just tended to avoid him. He was a singer with a deep baritone voice, and he did drop out of elementary school. He never even made it to middle school. And in his teens and early 20s, he frequented brothels a lot.
Well, I mean, was it Europe? Because it's legal.
No, this was Brooklyn.
In what year, though?
That was, it would have been the early 1900s.
Oh, yeah, then it was a thing. It was a thing.
Yeah. He found a girl named Sarah Gordon. She was one of six children of a florist who also lived in Brooklyn. She had knee-length braids, fair skin, and blue eyes. Her father regularly abused her mother. It was almost a daily occurrence.
Horrible how so many people in that time have similar stories.
Yes, that was just her life. And she wanted desperately to escape the situation.
Oh, for sure.
At 16, Sarah actually fell headfirst from a second-story window, and she was diagnosed with, quote, serious anemia. After that fall, she was sent to live with some extended family in Richmond, Virginia. But after she recovered, the extended family basically kicked her out, so she was forced to return to Brooklyn. By this time, her father, the florist, had lost his job because of the economy. He took to drinking and beating his wife even more, and she eventually went clinically insane. During this time, being, quote, crazy like that, having a mental illness was greatly frowned upon.
He forced
his children to keep it quiet. He went so far as to hide his wife in a closet during the census so she wouldn't be counted. Sarah and Robert fell madly in love with Sarah. For Sarah, it was just a way out of that horrible home situation. She did not love him at all. They were married on November 26, 1902, and she was already pregnant when they got married. The book says they lived in, quote, hell on earth on a place called Sand Street. It was one of the roughest places in America.
Oh.
Robert worked as a busboy, and Sarah stayed home while she was pregnant. She was constantly sick. She gave birth to the baby, but that baby died 2 days after birth. There was no burial for it. She just threw the baby in the trash. She got pregnant.
I've heard that happening a lot then. It just breaks my heart. But I mean, it's probably like of the times.
Well, that, and they couldn't afford a burial.
Right. Like it's crazy. Even now, how expensive a burial is for anyone, like,
yeah,
ridiculous.
She actually got pregnant a few months later again. And on May 13th, 1904, she gave birth prematurely to another girl, and that baby died 2 hours later. However, since a doctor was present for this birth, that baby was buried in an unmarked grave. Sarah almost died that time, and the doctor told her, don't have any more children, you will die with the next one. But she did get pregnant again, obviously. With this third pregnancy, their marriage really started to fall apart. Robert left her, abandoned her while she was pregnant. She was forced to return to her father's apartment because she had no other option. And there was a huge heat wave that year in New York. It got up to 115 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's when she went into labor, of course.
Yeah.
This baby lived, born July 29th, 1905. Robert learned that baby survived, and that's what forced him to return home because he wanted to meet his baby. And he wanted to name her after his sister-in-law that he evidently was like secretly in love with. That part was really weird.
That's so creepy.
Yeah. Sarah didn't order a birth certificate for this baby because she thought that this baby was just going to die and she was going to die with it. So because of that, Robert was the one who went and got the birth certificate, and that's why he's the one who named her. So he named her Clara Beau. and she was basically unloved and unwanted by everyone in her life. And that was just chapter one.
This poor lady, like...
like, literally from birth, she was kind of doomed.
Yeah.
Sarah's father, his name was Frederick Gordon. He eventually put his wife, Sarah's mother, in an insane asylum. And he was then forced to go live with Sarah, Clara, and Robert. And it wasn't an issue because Robert would basically disappear for weeks at a time, just out being a tomfoolery. But surprisingly, Frederick was very loving with Clara. They got along very well. He never abused her like he did his wife or with Sarah. They had a very loving relationship. So it was quite a surprise when they were playing one day and he literally went into an epileptic fit and basically had a heart attack and died right in front of her on her swing set. Sarah walked in on it and she turned to Clara and said, "I wish it had been me." And Clara was only 5 at the time. In 1911, Clara was told that her mother fell down a staircase, but given Sarah's state of mind, it was most likely a suicide attempt. That fall would reopen the wound from when she was 16 falling out of the window, and it brought on various seizures and other ailments that would be with her the rest of her life. On the off chance that Robert was home, he would get belligerent and he would beat both Sarah and Clara. Because of this, Clara developed a stammer that she could never get rid of. She had one friend whose name was Johnny, who lived in an apartment in their building. And their apartment caught on fire one year and she watched him burn alive. She was 9 years old. Given all of this, Clara obviously had to escape somehow, and she found that escape at the movies. She went as often as she could, and basically any money that they had left over, she went to the movies, spent it on a movie and popcorn and a drink. Sarah's condition started deteriorating to the point where Clara was more of her servant than a child. In 1918, the pandemic of Spanish influenza hit, and the family was forced to move to a place basically in Coney Island. At that new school that she was at when they moved, she got heavily involved in theater, and she was picked to be like the leader of the lead character in the play. She was very excited about it. However, Clara never got to play the part. She was forced to drop out of school and find work. She never finished 8th grade. She would work some odd jobs. She would sell like corn dogs and hot dogs at Coney Island. She was a waitress at some restaurant every now and then. With her money, she subscribed to a magazine called Motion Picture because she could afford it for a quarter. And they had a contest where the first prize was to get a part in a movie. To enter the contest required 2 pictures of herself. She couldn't afford it, so she unwillingly asked her father, and surprisingly, he agreed to it. So she went and had her picture taken. It was not professional photos, and she ended up hating both of the photos that were taken, but since that was the only thing she had, she submitted those.
Probably couldn't afford, obviously, to do anything different. It's like, well, this is what I have. This is what I have to go with, yep. Or just not do it.
So she mailed him in. She made it through to the final round where she and 9 other finalists went on to do screen tests, basically. After the screen test, she went back home and Sarah demanded to know where she had been. Clara hadn't told her. She'd kept it a secret. But under the pressure of Sarah grilling her, she fessed up and said, "I've been doing the screen test." Sarah was so upset that she fainted. When she came to, she told Clara that she was going to hell and that Sarah would be the one to kill her.
What?
Yes. However, 3 days later, Clara got word that she won the contest. And that was chapter 2.
I've never understood people, like, as a parent, and I'm not saying that being a parent means that I know for sure, but like, because Anyway, I know you can not be a parent and agree with me, right? But like, I've never understood, especially once I became a parent, how people can say things like that to their children or treat their children that way. Like, I just don't get it. Like,
oh, I mean, it gets worse, Miranda.
Oh, I mean, can imagine it does, but I'm just saying, like, I don't understand.
Like, I don't understand either. Stuff has been said in my family that should not be uttered between parents and children. So,
oh,
yeah, yes. Like, yeah, I don't, I will never understand this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get it wrong. I know my mom listens to us, but she's okay with me saying this. I there are a lot of things in my growing up that people would be like, excuse me, what? Even Caden once, my mom and I were talking about, she's like, yeah, this used to happen. And I now know with lots of therapy and like having grandchildren that like, I shouldn't have done that. But before she said all that, Caden goes, what? That's abuse. And my mom laughed and goes, yeah. And actually we were talking about how when she used to brush my hair, I was very tenderheaded as a child. And I'm not. But she used to like basically pull my hair and I would be crying and begging her to stop because my hair gets tangled extremely easily, even now as an adult. And she'd be like, you ripping it out of my head, trying to brush my hair. And I'd be like, you're hurting me, like literally crying. And she would like swat me with a brush and be like, you're fine, sit still. I'm like, I'm laughing through the trauma. But my mom has since, like, my mom, actually, we're very close, and it's great. But when she was explaining the story, at first, Caden didn't know she was talking about something she used to do. And he's like, that's abuse! My mom was like, yeah, I know that now, and I'm very sorry, but... So I get it. Like, we've all got stuff in our family, and they were like, this should never have been done or said, 100%. But yes. This... Oh, poor Clara. And like you said, yeah. It's only chapter 2.
Yep. I think the worst part, I think, is in chapter 3 that I'm about to cover. But anyway, so she wins the contest. She is taken to a local studio in New York to have proper pictures taken. And an article comes out that announces her winning, and it's titled A Dream Come True. She was eventually put on a movie titled Beyond the Rainbow, starring Billy Dove. She was the most celebrated beauty of the decade.
Mm-hmm. I do know that name.
The director, Christy Cobain, said that Clara was too ugly to be in his movie. He straight out said it to her face. The Brewster organization is the one who held that fame and fortune contest, and they promised free publicity for the movie if he was willing to put Clara in. So he relented and he made Clara Dove's little sister. She was paid $50 for 1 week of work.
I wonder what that would compute to. This was what, 1920s, you said?
That would have been around, yeah, it would have been around 1920, maybe 1918. Are you doing the math or Google's doing the math?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Google would be doing the math. I don't know. Miranda, don't math. But I mean, $50 in 1920 would be about $785 today.
Okay.
That's a lot of money. I mean, so I know some people are like, $785 is not a lot of money, but if somebody handed you a check right now for $785, would you not be like, woohoo?
Yeah, like, I'd be super happy.
I'd be like, groceries. But, and I live in a country where they're not as expensive as your guys. But yes, wow. So she was we're talking about she was only paid $50. Can you imagine what everybody else was getting?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
So part of the contract for doing the movie was that she had to supply 4 of her own dresses. She obviously did not own 4 dresses, so she had to ask a cousin for help. They loaned her $80. She also had to do her own makeup on set. She had never worn makeup before. So she was trying to like look around at the other women on set and emulate what they were doing. It did not look good.
Cobain, it'd be like me doing makeup versus you doing makeup. People be like, what did this girl just do?
Cobain absolutely hated it and said that she looked like a clown.
Oh.
However, Clara was always very good at crying on cue. And when asked about it later in life, Clara said all she had to do was think of home.
That poor girl.
Sarah's condition worsened. And one night, Clara was awakened by Sarah holding a knife to her throat, saying she was going to kill her.
She did tell her she would.
Yep. However, Sarah fainted before doing the deed, and Sarah woke up the next morning with no memory of the event. However, this contributed to Clara's lifelong insomnia. She suffered from insomnia for the rest of her life after that night.
I could imagine you would never sleep well again if you woke up one evening to anyone holding a knife, let alone the person that you thought you could trust most in the world.
Yeah. The movie Beyond the Rainbow premiered February 19th, 1922. Clara invited two girls from her school to the movie in hopes of redeeming her image and any bullying that was happening at school. But it turns out that Cobain had cut all of her parts from the movie, so they just bullied her even more for it.
Yeah, because then you're like, I'm in this movie, and everybody, the people that can afford it, go see this movie, and they're like, ah, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Oh.
After learning about the movie, Sarah once again threatened Clara at knife point. Clara fled, and she ended up wandering the streets for 2 days before her father found her. After that, Robert then committed Sarah to the same insane asylum that her own mother had died in.
Oof. I mean, Sarah is really crazy, but you wonder, this is that whole thing that we talk about now in modern day where, like, you don't let what happened before, like, not passing it to your children, which is what Sarah got it from her family, the way she was treated. And now she's just passing it right on to Clara.
Yep, that's exactly what's happening. In the meantime, Clara went looking for more work. She found a temporary, like background acting stuff there in New York. It paid $35 a week, and she did that for 13 weeks.
Okay.
Her mother eventually got out of the asylum, and the family got their own apartment. It didn't go well. Let's see. Clara started working for Cosmopolitan Pictures as an extra on a movie called Enemies of Women. And that New Year's Eve, Sarah was taken back to the asylum and she was declared terminally insane. The very next day, she died there. And Clara blamed herself because she thought that if she didn't do movies, Sarah would be okay.
No, ma'am, and, Clara. No.
Yeah.
Not your fault.
In reality, Sarah was suffering from epilepsy due to the head injuries.
I was going to say, and the head injuries were all brought on from a combination of like her father and her husband abusing her essentially.
Well, and, that, and
you
when
said she had a fall, but like,
yeah, she fell out the second story window,
which if she was being abused like that, did someone push her out the second story window?
Yeah, that's, you know? That's a good question. So the next chapter, we just kind of, it kind of outlines where she started getting more and more roles. She got an agent named Maxine Alton. Clara was 17. And basically everyone was saying, you need to go to California. We're going to send you to California. So Clara hops on the train and heads to Hollywood. Now we're in the second part of the book. It's called Part 2, Hollywood Flapper. During this time in Hollywood, studios began placing what they called morality clauses in actors' contracts. It was kind of to control how actors and actresses behaved outside of their job, basically. Paramount's, this is an excerpt from the Paramount's contract. It says, the artist agrees to maintain a standard of conduct with due respect to public conventions and morals, and agrees not to do any act which will tend to degrade the artist in society or bring the artist into public disrepute or subject the artist to scorn or ridicule or that will tend to offend the public sense of decency or prejudice the corporation or the motion picture industry in general. That is very important to note. because in a couple of chapters, we're going to realize that Clara didn't give one iota about that clause. So Clara gets off the train and she looks like a literal train wreck. She basically didn't sleep the entire train ride. She didn't want to miss anything that she was seeing. Her hair was all kind of frizzy. Her clothes were dirty. Benjamin Percival Schulberg, he's the former head of Paramount Productions, had branched out and created his own company, and he was the one who wanted Clara. Her appearance was very off-putting, but he immediately did a screen test on her, and she was able to switch emotions at the drop of a hat. He immediately hired her as the second lead in a movie called Maytime. Clara did have a somewhat serious boyfriend back in New York. His name was Arthur, nicknamed Artie, and he eventually comes and joins Clara in California. And her agent, Maxine, kind of acted more like her mother than her agent. It can be both good and bad, because obviously Clara needed a good female presence in her life that she did not have. But it also opened the doors for some exploitation.
Oh, for sure. And that happens a lot.
Yeah.
You and I both just watched a show that very heavily discusses that in Hollywood with younger actors and actresses. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And when you have a 17-year-old who had basically never left home before, all of a sudden thrust into Hollywood, Clara's going to trust her.
Yeah.
So Artie comes out there. He attempts to teach Clara how to drive a car, but it doesn't go well. And Clara basically just declared herself a passenger princess.
Hey, listen, I'm all for passenger. I love to drive, but listen, sometimes passenger princess is just.
Clara did start getting some more roles, and her salary actually tripled in just a couple of months. She and Maxine bought a bungalow off of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, that's big.
Artie, the boyfriend, wanted to join them, but Maxine said no. Which, I mean, it's the 20s. I understand not wanting to live together before you're married and such.
Well, it is the 20s. She signed a morality clause. So as much as I think Maxine doesn't have a right to tell her what to do, she's also probably in a sense of looking out being like, listen, this would be a huge scandal
in
current market. And scandals cancel movies, which, I mean, you know what? It's kind of making me think of the Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Yeah.
And that's what it's called. It's fictional, but it talks about very real things that happened in that golden kind of age. So it's making me think kind of that.
Yeah. Soon after, Maxine actually starts having an affair with Schulberg. And Clara figures out that Maxine needs her more than she needs Maxine. She insists that Schulberg fire Maxine, and she wants to bring her father to Hollywood so she can have one of her parents with her.
Okay. Well, at the same time, anyway. Okay, continue. Sorry, I'm having thoughts. Having some thoughts.
She did a role in a movie called Black Oxen, and for that, she received a ranking on the Wampus Baby Star list of 1924. And it was basically a list of up-and-coming actors. But she made, like, the top of the list that year. She went on to make a bunch of movies in a very short amount of time because they're silent, so there's no, like, sound production or anything to go with it. So they're able to crank out movies, like literally in a week.
Oh, yeah.
But she wasn't paid per movie. She was paid per week. She was contracted for $500 a week. But the way her contract is written, she only got 200 of that. The rest of it either went to Schulberg or the company she was contracted for.
Because they would, it's like their commission, basically.
Yeah. But she, since she didn't know anything about money or how to handle money, whatever contract was thrust in front of her, she just signed it. She didn't really know what she was signing. So she was heavily taken advantage of in that way. She got a 3-bedroom house for her and Artie. They shared a room. Scandal. And her father moved in. She also got a dog, and the dog got his own room as well.
Listen, I'm for it. if you can, yeah.
Well, and the dog's room was super special. Like, she took up the flooring, so it was a dirt floor, so the dog could, like, play around in the dirt and stuff.
Yeah.
But that dirt, like, eventually made its way throughout the house.
Oh, so absolutely.
Clara's house was always described as being messy and dirty.
No, thank you.
On July 9th, Robert went to the store for a soda, and he came back with a wife.
Excuse me, what?
Yeah. Her name was Ella Mowry, and he had stood outside the store and was throwing out various pickup lines to women that would walk by, and Ella took him up on it. And she was a self-proclaimed 23-year-old orphan from Paris, and they went and got married on the spot.
Well, that would be why. She was an orphan from Paris. She came over here as an immigrant, and she's like, I got to find a way to stay here. No offense to her.
No, but. just wait. Hold on. Story gets better.
Oh, God.
On the marriage certificate, he listed his age as 38. However, at the time, he was actually 49. They went home.
Why you guys got to be lying?
They went back home, and Clara immediately threw her out. And they ended up divorcing 1 month later. Under oath, Ella admitted she was actually 18, the same age as Clara, and she was also still married to her ex-husband.
What?
Since Robert didn't have a job, he depended on Clara to help with the divorce, and it cost Clara 6 weeks of her salary.
What? For a divorce in 1920?
Yes.
Holy bejesus. Which, by the way, I looked up and you said she was actually clearing about $200 a week, right?
Yes.
That is $3,000 today.
Good grief.
$3,000 a week? Yes, please.
So $3,000 a week for 6 weeks is how much that divorce costs. Think about that. By the end of that same year, Clara and Artie broke up as well, but they stayed friends. They just realized that they wanted to go separate ways. This relationship wasn't serving them anymore.
Which, okay.
Yeah. They parted on good terms. They stayed friendly for the rest of their lives.
Amicable works for me.
Yep. In June 1925, Motion Picture Classic was the movie that put Clara on the cover. And, oh wait, no, that was a magazine. Sorry. So in June 1925, a magazine called Motion Picture Classic put Clara on their cover, and they ran a story titled The Kid Who Sassed Lubitsch. But the quote in here was something that I wanted to say. Little Clara Bow shows alarming symptoms of becoming the sensation of the year in Hollywood. There is something vital and compelling in her presence. She is the spirit of youth. She is young America rampant, the symbol of flapperdom.
Flapperdom.
Yeah, just to give you an idea of the kind of person that Clara was being portrayed to be in Hollywood.
I do like the word flapperdom, though. Like, I'm stuck on that. Sounds good to me.
Clara eventually only exclusively worked for a company called Preferred Pictures since she had gained such notoriety. She did 20 films in 2 years.
Wow.
However, she also gained a reputation as a flirt and a whore. And that's a quote from the book.
That's sad, though, because, like, listen, if you a single woman and you doing your thing and you doing it, like, responsibly, why you gotta have a name? Why people gotta be?
Well, that's the thing. She wasn't always responsible. We're about to get into it.
Oh, no. Not an unexpected pregnancy. Oh, boy. I don't like those. I had one myself. But anyway.
So the company that she worked exclusively for was called Preferred Pictures, but Preferred Pictures would loan her out to other movie companies. So she got her first Paramount picture, and she basically with that movie became an instant star in mainstream Hollywood. There's various instances of Schulberg. He continued to give Clara bad contracts so that he could keep making money off of her. So now we're getting to the juicy part. Two men,
you
Gilbert Rowland.
I mean,
well, now we're getting to the hot gossip part.
Oh, we get into the tea.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So two men, Gilbert Roland and Robert Savage, publicly fought over Clara. Savage attempted to basically kidnap Clara and coerce her into marriage. But when that didn't work, Clara went to the press and declared that she loved Gilbert, not Robert. So she was trying to put that fight to bed. However, Savage then writes a poem outlining his suicide.
Ooh.
He lays on the couch with a picture of Clara in the crook of his arm, and he slashes his wrists. After he does that, he then puts the picture on the floor so the blood can, like, pool on Clara's photo. It's very dramatic.
I was going to say, this sounds like a movie.
Yep. The police find him and take him to General Hospital, and he is then admitted to the psych ward. And there is a quote that I want to read real quick.
Okay.
On page 68. Where is it? Crap, where'd it go? Maybe it's not on page 68 and I typed the wrong thing.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no, here it is. So the press obviously went to ask Clara, like, what do you think about this? Blah, 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 blah. And she says, Mr. Savage is just an episode in my young life. And I'm going to read it with a Brooklyn accent because that is how she talks. She had a very heavy Brooklyn accent.
Let me see if you can do it. Go for it.
He says he tried to commit suicide because I turned him down. Gave him the gate, he calls it.
I love you, but you still sound Southern.
Oh, well. And then she goes on to she goes on to say, well, let me tell you this. When a man attempts suicide over a woman, he don't cut his wrists with a safety razor blade and then drape himself over a couch with a cigarette between his lips. No, they don't do it that way. They use pistols.
Well, he did, so.
So needless to say, she didn't take it seriously. The media really didn't take it seriously. But I mean, a dude tried to take his life because she turned him down.
This is the person that really did need the mental help assistance.
Yeah. I mean,
we've had all kinds of people go into the asylum up to now, but like.
Yep. By this point, most decency clauses were defunct. But Clara was seen as the most indecent with these men. So Paramount set up a trust for Clara and said if she behaved, she could have the money at the end of her contract and they would put in $500 a week. But to Clara, that didn't matter. She didn't care and she ignored that.
I think I love money. Listen, this is going to come out wrong, but I think I would be like, no, I'll take the money. Because
in Clara's mind, if she didn't have the money, then it didn't exist.
That is okay. Well, you know what? That is smart on Clara because it's kind of like where we grew up being told, don't put the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
So I kind of get that logic, but we're talking $7,000 a week in today's money.
Yep.
You tell me. Sit over there and behave. You know what? I'll just sit in this corner and read my smut for $7,000 a week. You can best believe I'm going to be the most well-behaved person on your payroll.
Well, Claire was not.
Well, I would have been. It would have been like, and she behaved. Book over.
It wouldn't be Clara Bow running wild. It'd be Miranda Berthold sitting quiet.
Quiet, because it's me. I ain't gonna be quiet, but I mean, I'd behave.
So, Clara's what I'm gonna say big break that like really gave her stardom was a World War II movie called Wings, and the reason it like catapulted her into the stratosphere was because she was topless for 1 second.
Literally, probably not even long enough for people to realize she was topless.
Basically, yeah. But it forced literally everyone in America to go to the movies and see this movie.
Oh, I've heard them doing that before. And it may have been, she may have been the person they were talking about, but I was watching a documentary where they said it caused people to go and just try to see if they could get a glimpse.
Yes.
Because everyone was reporting, oh, so-and-so is going to be starring topless. And it actually was like, yes, she was topless, but you actually only ever saw like her back. So technically she was topless, but people never saw it. But the amount of people that like paid that couldn't normally afford to go to the movies just because they wanted to see boobies.
Yep. And that's exactly what happened.
I mean, if I wanted to see that, I just looked down.
So we are in chapter 11 for anyone that wants to read this.
This has been a lot already. Whatever.
Yeah. So a novel called It was published by Eleanor Glenn.
Okay.
And it describes a person who contains certain traits. Eleanor was on, I think it was Paramount set. I should have written this down. Anyways. Mm-hmm. Eleanor was on set just walking around the studio looking at things. And she met Clara. And she looked at Clara and says, she has it. That phrase confused Clara a lot. She had no idea what she was talking about. She obviously did not read books. But that was like the fourth wing of that era. Everyone had read It. And Eleanor, she had those certain characteristics. And Eleanor went on to write the screenplay for the book and called it It and pitched it to Clara. Clara took it. Enter Gary Cooper, the next man in Clara's life. Clara was not shy about revealing details about her men. She would often go into very graphic details. Personal details.
Okay.
However, Cooper refused to speak about Clara in public. He actively avoided saying anything or mentioning Clara's name in any of the press.
Gary Cooper was a very well-known American actor. Kind of that name I actually recognize.
The studio eventually like was working her way too hard and she got injured on set. She like physically collapsed, but they forced her to continue working. The studio put out a press release saying that Clara was having a mental breakdown from her numerous affairs instead of their overworking her.
Of course we blame. Oh my God.
Yeah. Slut shaming.
Not here for it.
She eventually like told them, I have to take a rest. And she took a 3-month vacation and she spent it decorating her house. She really didn't leave Hollywood. She just stayed home.
See, so she can behave for $7,000 a week.
That's because she was tired.
I mean, I can imagine.
Eventually, Gary Cooper grew tired of Clara and he basically had no intention of marrying her. They break up, but they continued to have encounters for the following 2 years, if you get my drift.
Woo, I get your drift.
Yeah. Clara was soon linked with multiple men at the same time, and she stated publicly that women could have both a career and a domestic life.
Yes.
Which was very unheard of at the time.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time, there was also this rumor that she got very friendly with the whole USC football team.
Ma'am.
The entire football team was the rumor.
Is there any truth? Do we get a truth?
We get a truth. Okay, we get a truth.
I need a truth.
So Clara was basically talked into going to her first football game at USC. They were like one of the top football teams in the country at that time. And I'm trying to like succinct this. She became friendly with the players in strictly a friend fashion. Like she would just throw parties at her house for the team when they won. She became like a season regular to go to their home games.
Okay. She became a fan of that team and it's just, she was affluential and had money so she could do things, be like, hey boys, I'm going to throw you a party. Like it's like a rich white man doing the same thing and they do, but instead she got called names because she's a female.
Exactly. Nothing sexual ever happened with any of the guys. And anyone who knew these boys could attest to it because they were just very innocent. Like, they literally just wanted to go to college to play football.
And who's going to turn down this rich lady throwing a party because you just won?
Exactly.
I mean, come on now.
And they actually helped Clara because they kept Clara out of trouble during that season that she became a fan.
Because she was devoting her energy to something.
Yeah. She had another outlet, basically. Mm-hmm. However, her father, Robert, was not happy that she was hanging around all these men. And so he basically put a stop to it. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, your child is behaving. Your child is doing, she's putting her energy into something good, whether the society sees it that way or not. And like, she's actually not going around doing these things where people, well, they are still slut shaming her, even though she's not doing anything. Welcome to being a woman. Yeah. But like, she's actively just trying to do some good and she's being active in the community, really, if you think about it.
Yeah. Like,
that's being part of being an active part of your community. And for once, she's not doing anything wrong. I didn't even know this woman 30 minutes ago, and now I am defending her like I've known her my whole life.
And I'm actually leaving out good chunks of this book. I'm literally just hitting the high points. So
wait, you leaving stuff out?
Yes.
Holy.
I'm telling you that Clara had quite a life. So the next part. Clara is interviewed by Adela, who is like the greatest woman reporter at the time. It's basically like being interviewed by Vogue, if you want to put it in today's standards. Mm-hmm. And that interview lasted all night. Adela.
I do feel like now the girl that wrote Seven Husbands had to have been familiar with Clara Bow.
Yeah, yeah.
I just, there's so many similarities in this that I'm very intrigued.
Well, and this is fangirl of me coming out. There's a lot of similarities in Clara Bow's story and Taylor Swift's story.
I wonder if that's why she resonated with her enough to write, because as you mentioned, you decided to read this book because of a song by Taylor on her new album. So I'm wondering if maybe she like did research or possibly even read this book and just found like a kindred spirit, like kind of resonated in a way.
Well, Taylor is a huge cinephile. So she directs, she produces, she does all kind of things with visual media. So I have no doubt that she has done extensive research on Clara Bow.
But I feel like when she did, there was something in it that she really felt like a connection to her.
Yeah.
Obviously. Well,
probably the slut shaming.
Oh, 100%. I think I would say 90% of women, probably even 98% of women are probably like, mm-hmm, I feel you.
But going back to this, Adela's interview lasted all night and it was published in three separate segments, basically three separate issues of the magazine because the interview was so long.
Oh, don't you know they sold so many copies of those?
Yes.
So many copies.
The magazine had issues with her colorful language, to put it lightly.
Girl, and I got you.
And they attempted to clean up her accent a little bit so it wouldn't come through in print. But the quote that I loved from this article was, "I gotta live with myself more than anybody else does."
I love that.
Like, why is that so deep?
That is extremely deep, because at the end of the day, it's like, you have to love yourself. You have to like yourself. You are your number one supporter and number one advocate. So go Clara, man.
Yeah. One thing Clara was known for that you wouldn't get in her early movies was that when she got to California, she dyed her hair a vividly red hair. You could basically see her coming from like a mile away. Her hair was so bright.
Like that fire engine, as they refer to it, fire engine red.
So Clara's first Technicolor movie was called Red Hair, and it was a hit because audiences wanted to see that bright, vivid hair on screen. Clara ended up having appendicitis after this and elected to have the surgery. The doctor Some other stuff was going on with her body, and the doctor basically wanted to remove her ovaries as well. But she was adamant that she wanted a family, so they did end up doing whatever they needed to do to keep her ovaries. So she had the appendix surgery, but she soon fell for the attending doctor, Earl Pearson.
Tui was at a much different pace than what she had been used to.
Well,
oh God. Every time I think I should feel the light, Bianca's like,
Her best friend at the time, her name was Tui, T-U-I. I like it. And she actually walked in on them making out on the day of her discharge. That night, Clara called Earl to invite him over after his shift. But plot twist, he was actually newly married, but his wife was still living in Texas, where he was originally from.
And I think I have gasped and AKA clutched my pearls that I don't even wear more times than I can count in this. Woo!
Clara is actually still the reigning champion of fan letters in Hollywood for receiving the most. She received 40,000 fan letters in 1 month. Tui, her best friend, ended up getting into some legal trouble. It leads to a court case, basically. She was originally from New Zealand, and she was being threatened with deportation.
I felt like with a name like that, she was definitely somewhere else. Like, not being rude, but that's just not common.
No, it's not an American name. She ends up calling Clara from jail, but her father, Robert, answers, and the police ask her who she's calling, and she says, "My fiance on a whim." So to save herself, she and Robert married September 22nd, 1928.
Sorry, choked on my water.
It was well known that Robert had actually had a crush on Tui for a while, but it was actually also well known that Tui was in love with Clara. She was what was called at the time on the quote lavender side.
That's what they called people that were bisexual, lesbian, what?
Lesbian is the lavender side.
They called them lavender.
Yeah.
Which, considering some of the words that people have used throughout the centuries to be negative, lavender is probably
one of the least offensive.
Exactly. I mean, I'll have to ask some of my friends how they feel about that one, but I feel like they would be like, compared to the other things I've been called, I think I'll take it.
Yeah. Obviously, the marriage did not last long. They both frequently cheated on each other. Tui eventually demanded a divorce, and this also led to the end of her and Clara's friendship. At the same time, Clara had begun giving hints to Earl Pearson in the press, and his wife heard about these hints and confronted him about it. And he was truthful because he wanted to expedite their divorce. However, he was not expecting the wife to sue Clara for $150,000.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Paramount got word of this and offered the wife $30,000 that was part of Clara's trust fund, and basically as a bribe to not go public with the scandal, and she took it. Earl Pearson was eventually exiled to Germany by his family. His wife eventually followed him out there and they reconciled. However, he secretly frequently sent telegrams to Clara expressing his undying love.
Listen, we're not a telegram. Okay, boys and girls, do you know what a telegram is? That ain't private. God bless. By the way, for anyone else wondering, because I still have this website pulled up, the wife settled for $30,000.
150. Oh, wait, no. No, that was what she sued for.
And she settled for.
Settled for 30, yeah.
Try $468,500.
Ooh.
I'd settle too. Oh. So. Every time you say an amount, I look it up and I'm like, what?
Oh, just keep it up for the rest of this then.
Oh, I got it. We're not going anywhere.
So at the same time, talkies were becoming a thing, but Clara was absolutely terrified. She knew that her accent was horrible, but she also had that stammer that she'd had since she was a child. Mm-hmm. So she did not want to do talkies.
I kind of forgotten about the stammer with everything else.
Yeah. her next boyfriend is an Irish stuntman named Jimmy Dundee.
I like your name, Jimmy.
She also finds a new best friend in a Hollywood hairdresser named Daisy DeBow.
Daisy should be that's an actress name.
Yes, it is.
Daisy DeBow, that's a good
and
name.
Let me tell you, Daisy is a whole character. I'll say I agree with most of what Daisy did, though. I'll put that out there. Daisy discovers that pretty much everyone is ripping Clara off. So mm-hmm. she cuts everyone off of Clara's accounts except for Clara and Daisy.
Good to go, Daisy. Please tell me, though, that Daisy didn't come back and then was like, well, I'm not taking for myself now.
Yeah, no. We're not going down that road. But at this point, Clara was pretty much penniless with a house that was falling apart. She had absolutely nothing to show for her career in Hollywood.
Well, when you make your dog its own room with a floor that's just dirt, I mean, your house would be falling apart too, probably.
But she had basically just given all her money to whoever asked for it. She didn't keep any money for herself.
So she's throwing these USC parties. People are saying, can I borrow $80? And she's like, sure.
Yeah, basically. So let's see. We're moving on from Jimmy. The next guy on the chompy block was Harry Richmond. He's a son of immigrant Jews born in Ohio. And he was basically nothing but a publicity seeker. He used Clara for more fame than anything.
He basically wanted a name for himself. That's
yeah.
How he thought he'd get it.
Yeah. Richmond was fully aware that Clara was not devoted to him. She frequently cheated on him. But he thought that if he proposed, that would calm her down a little bit.
She
straight up told him he could take her as she is or not. So it was a ring or nothing at all.
I kind of love that. She's like, you get what you get.
So Richmond was like, all right, here's a ring. So they got engaged. Clara ended up having a few more health issues, and she did have to have one ovary removed. However, she would never have children with her fiance because he was actually sterile. He never told her, though, and the hospital where she received her treatment was known throughout the country as an abortion clinic. So there were a lot of rumors and gossips that she went to that hospital to have an abortion. Shortly after that, she announced that she would not be marrying Harry, and they parted ways. Her life and past relationships were spread throughout the country with hot gossip. There was no escaping it. Pearson was actually back from Germany, and he had stolen that $30,000 that was meant for Elizabeth. But Clara and Elizabeth did not know that he had stolen that $30,000.
You mean the one I calculated of $468,500?
Uh-huh.
He stole it.
Yep, he stole it. Elizabeth never received it. It's like she thought something had happened, and Clara thought that the company had sent the money, so she thought Elizabeth had it. So no one knew where that money was except for him. And he used that money to open his own urology practice.
Well, I mean, I guess at least he opened a practice.
Clara became known at Paramount as Crisis a Day Clara. She was basically always having meltdowns and just not a general pleasant person to be around.
I mean, I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think at this point she was with a guy named Rex. And Daisy and Rex were arguing over Clara's financial situation, and a lot of stuff went down. I won't get into it too much, but Daisy was eventually thrown in jail. It was not, I'll say, true charges. Like, they basically framed Daisy for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the court case was called People versus DeBow. And Clara was forced to testify against Daisy. Because of this, she went into hysterics and she was ordered bed rest for a month. However, Daisy was only found guilty of one count as opposed to all 37 counts of fraud.
Jesus. 37 so, counts.
Oh. She was accused of 37, but only found guilty of one.
Well, and you said they basically were like framing her anyway, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like 37 yeah. counts. Like, okay, if you're going to frame somebody, give them a couple of counts, but 37?
Yeah. A new joke emerged in Hollywood that Clara had, quote, laid everything by the linoleum, basically, but the linoleum basically means she will bed anything and everything. There were rumors of bestiality, of just anything and everything they accused Clara of. She had three scandals in 6 months. That very public courtroom breakdown that led to bed rest, and Paramount was basically like, we can't use someone like you anymore. You have too much to your name now. They started giving her secondary roles, no more star roles. A gossip column basically called the Coastal Reporter started publishing things weekly about Clara that were very scandalous, even by modern standards.
And listen, housewives ate that stuff up at that time.
Yes,
like,
they did.
I mean, even now, I'm not saying that like gossip columns aren't loved now too, but like that's what they read. Like,
yeah. They said the brazen mistress of stuntmen Jimmy Dundee, Earl Pearson, film technician John Reinhardt, Harry Richman, and Rex Bell, a cowboy Lothario she liked best because he was ambidextrous in the saddle.
Okay.
They just published anything and everything.
It's TMZ!
Yeah, basically. A legal battle ensued, and the government actually got involved since the editor and owner of that magazine accidentally sent copies of that magazine to a government building, which violates a law, Bill 228. It was basically don't send false things to government employees, whatever that was. It was a weird, obscure law.
If you ever have time, look up the weird obscure laws of like your state, and you would just, and a lot of them are still in the books, you will be baffled and you would be like, what?
Yeah it was a weird loophole, but that eventually, to her credit, stuff got retracted. Mm-hmm. But because of everything, Clara was bedridden with anxiety and depression. But Schulberg threatened to extend her contract without salary if she didn't show up for her next film. She wrote him this very long letter, and it was basically outlining everything that she was dealing with, and a lot of it was just mental illness. That's what it boiled down to. However, he concealed this letter, and he hid it for 60 years. It wasn't discovered till 60 years after this fact. So he disregarded the letter. He told the company's lawyer to take legal action. In threat of this, Clara did show up by the end of the week, but she ended up having a mental breakdown at her home one night, and she was admitted to a mental hospital and on doctor's orders not allowed to work at all. The studio used this as an excuse to nullify her contract and got out of paying her for that time in the hospital. After her hospital stay, Clara went to the studio to collect her things, and this is a quote from the book. The most popular movie star in history had become obsolete. She was only 25 years old. Clara basically kind of exiled herself. She was living with her boyfriend Rex at the time, and he had invited over for dinner one night, Clara's closest friends, and he announced that he was taking Clara away from Hollywood to never return, that it was for the best.
I mean, it sounds like.
Yeah. He ended up taking her to a 300-acre ranch over in Nevada, like on the Nevada-California border, and it was called The Shack. There was no electricity, no running water, no telephone, but for Clara, it was paradise. It was exactly what she needed.
I mean, I'd like some running water, please.
The nearest town was 35 miles away, called Searchlight, and the town didn't even have a theater, so no one in that town really knew who she was. She made one brief public appearance at an Independence Day rodeo in Searchlight, and a couple of reporters found her. And one reporter wrote that for the first time in her life, she seems genuinely happy. Rex was like a, kind of like a stuntman, but he wasn't called a stuntman. I forget what he was called.
They used to not call him that. I forget what they called him.
But he was offered a small part in a movie for $500 a week. He and Clara drove to film it in Las Vegas, and they got married there in 1931. They did their best to keep it a secret, but once the license is filed, obviously anyone can find it.
Yeah, so the press, public knowledge, or maybe not public knowledge. Anyway,
public record,
Thank you.
So eventually the press find it, and they descend on the ranch. They're swarming the ranch. A magazine called Photoplay then published an article stating that she was in exile. She was never going to return to Hollywood. She wasn't worth anything anymore. To prove that publisher wrong, she resolved to return to Hollywood. At this point, she had kind of gained her reputation back, for lack of a better word, since she had kind of married and settled down. She was better viewed in the public eye. Mm-hmm. So all the studios were like vying for her. She narrowed it down to Columbia, who was offering $100,000 for one film, or Fox, $250,000 for two films. She signed with Fox. Her first movie with Fox was called Call Her Savage, and the studios
50 is what she did. Okay. Keep going.
I knew you would. So she did a movie called Call Her Savage. The studio sent her on a European tour for press stuff. A year later, she filmed the second movie called Hoopla, which she personally hated, but the critics absolutely loved it. How much is $250,000?
$250,000 is basically $4 million.
Ooh.
$4 million and you want two movies? What do you want me to do?
So with that money, they were able to build a proper house on the ranch, and they called it Rancho Clarita. Mm-hmm. She also got pregnant and gave birth to Rex Larbo Beldum, nicknamed Tony. And he looked just like Rex, which Robert, her father, did not like Rex at all. And when he found out that Rex looked like when he found out Tony looked like Rex, he didn't even bother to come visit Clara in the hospital because he hated Rex so much.
Do I need to explain genetics to this man?
Yeah, remember, he wasn't all there.
I know, but okay.
Yeah. She had another pregnancy, but that ended up in a miscarriage. After the miscarriage, she and Rex opened the, quote, It Case on the corner of Hollywood Boulevard and Vine Street. It was basically like a bakery type thing. Mm-hmm. They wanted to be cute little bakery owners. 2 weeks later, she found out she was pregnant again. The doctors warned her that this would be her last pregnancy, and she was put on bed rest.
I mean, they kind of told her, like.
Yeah. And because of that, the cafe was forced to close. She gave birth to George Francis Robert Beldum via C-section. And this baby looked just like Clara. So Robert was like, yeah, I'll come visit you in the hospital for this one.
You can't play favorites.
Well, he did. Let's see. So they go back to the ranch, and Rex actually takes more political jobs in the community, trying to build up life. He was always a very big supporter of ranchers and cattlemen. Because of this, he traveled a lot, mostly to Vegas, because it was like the big city. Mm-hmm. But Clara was not happy that he was gone so much from her perspective. He would come home almost every night, but he was gone during the day, and Clara did not cope well basically being a single mom. with two young children.
I mean, just real quick, I ask, don't people go to work all day every day? Like, if he comes home at night, I mean, isn't that what a job is?
Well, Clara was very, very angry. And one time he came back, he had actually stayed overnight somewhere. He had to. When he came back, she came out of the house with a rifle and shot his tires.
Oh.
And that was the beginning of their marital problems. Her insomnia continued to get worse. Rex started taking her to various clinics throughout the country. Each doctor was like, we don't know what's wrong with her. She's perfectly healthy. She just doesn't sleep.
Anxiety.
Yeah, basically.
Depression.
Robert eventually basically moved onto the ranch to try and help out.
Mm-hmm.
He highly favored George, who looked like Clara. And he regularly terrified Tony, who looked like Rex.
Which clearly Rex is seems like a decent man.
Yeah. Yeah, Rex was pretty good. He tried to throw Clara a birthday party, but she resented him for it. She didn't want to be in the public eye like that, but he basically brought everyone and their mama to the ranch for the birthday party. He made it worse by deciding to run for a congressional seat in Nevada. He wanted to get into bigger politics. Her ailments continued to get a lot worse, much like her mother's had.
I feel like that was a read the room situation.
Yeah.
As far as like having the party.
Well, one morning while Rex was away, the boys wanted to be nice for their mom and wanted to serve her breakfast in bed.
Aww.
They walked in and found her in bed unconscious. She would not wake up. They saw pills all over the place and she had overdosed.
Mm.
They ran to the ranch foreman for assistance and Al went to town to get the ambulance. And Marge, his wife, found a note from Clara stating that she preferred death to public life.
Well, the public treated her the way that they did for all those years. I mean,
yeah, she was over it. The doctor arrived and pumped her stomach, and by the time they were loading her up, she was coherent enough to ask for a cigarette. Yeah, that was Claire through and through.
Oh my Lord.
Rex did end up losing the election that year, and they sent their sons to live with Rex's mom. They eventually all get back together and they try to make it work. They moved to Las Vegas so Rex could be around more, like be around the family and still do political things.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually also opened a Western gear store, like selling boots and hats and cowboy stuff.
Okay.
And he actually forbade Robert from living with them. Robert was forced to get an apartment not far away from the house.
Listen, I would too. My father-in-law hates me. Why would I want him living with me? Not mine, but I'm talking about the dude in the book. Like, why would you deal with that? I mean, come on now.
But this forced Robert to, every day he would walk to visit Clara wearing only a bathrobe, boxer shorts, slippers, socks, and garters with a pork pie hat and a stogie in his mouth.
Well, then.
One day on one of these visits, Clara got real tired of Robert hitting poor Tony and gave them both boxing gloves and told them to go at it. And Tony knocked Robert out, and Robert never messed with Tony again after that.
Wow.
They enrolled George in a military school, and one weekend when they went to visit, Clara's fear was like so paralyzing that she stayed drunk the entire time. They think she had agoraphobia.
I mean, makes sense. Yeah.
Rex was fed up with everything and he brought up institutionalization and Clara agreed to it.
Okay.
Yep. So she went to the Institute of Living located in Hartford, Connecticut. It was one of the first psychiatric hospitals in the U.S. Clara went there October 3rd, 1949. She followed a diet, a regular exercise routine, psychiatric consultations, and she was also put under electroconvulsive therapy.
Oh.
She didn't want to leave her room too much, so she took up painting, drawing, and she took remedial English classes, which she earned all A's in.
Well, then.
She received several psychiatric diagnoses, obviously depression, but the big one was schizophrenia.
That makes sense. That makes sense based on everything you've told me so far.
They also analyzed how Clara used sex as power over men instead of for her pleasure. And that was actually just what Sarah, her mother, had taught her to do. So she was just doing what she was taught. Clara was actually extremely intelligent, but she lacked an ability to reason. It was actually a hereditary condition that you can track throughout her family history.
I mean, it seems like most of her behavior is stuff that you can kind of like attribute back to mimicking what she saw, essentially.
Yeah.
Like behaving in the manner that she saw her mother and other people around her. So, I mean, it makes sense.
The big thing is that they worked on repressed memories with Clara. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to turn to page 264.
While you're looking, I will say, the more you read and hear about people working on repressed memories, it's truly both terrifying and fascinating at the same time. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, like the first part of repressed memories that came back was when Robert would leave her and Sarah alone together for like weeks or months on end when they were living in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And Sarah was basically left to fend for not only herself, but for their daughter. So each evening, Clara would leave their room and return later with a stranger whom she would introduce to Clara as her uncle.
Then
Sarah would lock Clara in a cupboard-sized closet, warning her not to make a sound until Uncle had gone. Crouched in the darkness amidst roaches, rats, and stale air, her eyes shut tight and her fists in her ears, the child retreated into an imaginary world where the strange, scary noises her uncles and mothers made could not be heard.
I was going to say, she could hear everything, though. Like, that is just...
Yeah.
But insane.
That was the first set of repressed memories that came back. The second thing that came out was, so Robert obviously had extended absence from home, and when he was there, he would beat Sarah and Clara. For some reason, though, Clara inexplicably loved Robert despite all of this. Like, she brought him to California. She brought him to the ranch. She brought him to Vegas. Like, he just went wherever she went.
That happens a lot. I feel truly it's like some sort of kind of like Stockholm syndrome kind of thing.
Although abused children often idealize abusive parents, Clara and Robert's relationship had a more sinister aspect. Whether shockingly jealous of his daughter's lovers, openly hateful of Rex and the grandson who resembled him, or assuming the royal title. Oh, yeah. He had told everyone to call him King, though. By the way, I forgot about that.
No.
Clara's father seemed less apparent than a rival of other men in her life. Eventually, when Sarah went to the asylum, Robert found himself in a domestic situation with a young girl who, despite her stricken state, still cooked his meals, washed his clothes, and cleaned their room without complaint. Since her father was the only person left in her life, Clara was basically doing anything she could to please him. In return, she was seeking tenderness and love. Instead, Robert raped her.
I was actually just about to say, all of that makes me wonder if something more happened.
And
you just answered that question.
Yeah. And that continued throughout her life. Clara basically just repressed anything that had to do with that and pretended it didn't exist.
A lot of victims of SA do repress.
Yes.
What happens to them, especially if it happened when they were children, they don't. Why would you want to remember?
Yeah, no, that's something you definitely want to forget.
100%.
2 days shy of her 45th birthday, Clara left the institution unescorted. Rex said that she could not live with the boys. So he enrolled Tony in the same military school that George went to. Clara moved back to Los Angeles. That was kind of near the military school so that she could also be near like a very prominent doctor. She could be near the boys. And Rex was still living in an apartment in Las Vegas, and they ended up selling their ranch in Nevada.
That would utterly gut me, though, if my husband was like, well, you can't live with our children.
Yeah. Clara was not agreeable to apartment living. It was too much, especially after basically living in an apartment with other people for however long in that institute.
I hear you, Clara. Apartment living is too much.
So she rented a 2-bedroom bungalow with a live-in nurse. She once again found respite in films. But this time, drive-ins were big, so she was able to go to the drive-in and watch movies, but she could do it from the comfort of her car and not have to get out and talk to people.
Drive-ins are fantastic. It's a sad thing that they're dying.
Hey, the one in Wicksburg's still going.
Is it? One in my hometown in Kentucky, it was like one of the longest running, and officially, I think like last year or so, they sold the entire lot. They sold off all the parts of the actually movie production, and now they're building a giant like apartment facility in
Oakland.
I know, it's so sad. I spent my whole childhood going there. But yeah, if you still have one near you, I highly recommend it.
Clara's favorite actor in the 50s was Marlon Brando. And she actually invited him to her house one time. And he went over. They talked. Nothing happened. They just talked. He then sent her a signed portrait thanking her for her time. She actually took up correspondence, like typing. Mm-hmm. She would write letters to almost everyone in the world, literally from President Eisenhower to the creator of the Twilight Zone.
I mean,
she wrote everyone. Robert, her father, eventually moved in with her. He died 2 years later at age 84. Tony joined the Air Force and George joined the Marines. Rex, who was still her husband, though they were estranged, he ran for lieutenant governor of Nevada, and she fully supported him. Rex had found another companion in a woman named Katie Jenkins. He refused to divorce Clara, saying that he was all she had. He didn't want to do that to her.
He basically still wanted to be able to support her, and I'm sure if he divorced her, then he knew that, one, mentally she might not be able to handle that, and then maybe financially he was trying to stay supportive. Is that what it was?
There's questions about it. I'll get into it in a second.
Okay.
George and Tony both got married 1 year apart from each other. They had their, I don't know who the grandchild was, but she had her first grandchild. They named him Charles Robert Beldam. Let's see. On July 4th, 1962, Rex went to Katie's house after a rally and he collapsed from a heart attack. He was 58 years old. A funeral was held in L.A., and 15 minutes before the ceremony began, Clara emerged from a limousine. Tony and George ran to shield her from reporters and cameras to protect her. It was her first public appearance in 15 years. In his will, he split everything between Tony and George. Clara got nothing.
Oh.
She was absolutely humiliated in the press for it. Except for doctor's office visits and holiday shopping, which Clara loved Christmas and she loved giving gifts, she would never leave her house again.
She was an agoraphobe.
Yeah. Clara's silent films never saw the light of day after they were filmed, like after they aired in theaters, and they actually sat deteriorating in a warehouse. There's hardly any copies of any of her silent films left to view this day.
It's kind of like how we don't have some of the original Who, because they used to just record over stuff all the time.
Eventually, most of her talkie movies were put on TV. However, Clara never saw a cent in royalties from them. Paramount claimed that her contract did not mention TV syndication.
And that's why I think it's fantastic that the actor and actresses fight for themselves today, because...
Because TV syndication wasn't a thing back when her contracts were written.
No, but it's not. Any good manager would be like, I want royalties, because other people were getting royalties. That's why I think it's very important that they do that now, because look at someone like her, who probably really could have, towards the end of her life, benefited from that money being there.
Yeah. Throughout all this time, she was constantly hounded for interviews, but she always said that she loved her sons and their families too much to put them through any of that. On September 26, 1965, Clara settled into bed to watch her favorite TV show, The Virginian. Her head slumped slightly, and Clara finally rested in peace. The autopsy later revealed that Clara had actually suffered from heart disease for 6 years, but she was too... she had a hypochondriac.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't notice. Yeah. She was eventually buried beside Rex. You go to page 284 in the book, it's labeled Aftermath, and it basically just tells you all the key players throughout her life, what they got up to. After his father's death, Tony changed his legal name to Rex Anthony Bell, and he attended law school.
I was just looking at some stuff about him.
Yeah, he was a district attorney in Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Acting, it says.
Yeah, but he was on his third wife.
Okay.
He had two children. George lives in Las Vegas. Tui was actually trapped in Australia after World War II. Because she had been traveling there, and she never returned to America. Let's visit Daisy. Speaking of her 18-month jail term, she said, "I had a ball. I was the pet of all the prison wardens because I did their nails." I'm telling you, I liked Daisy. Who else would we? After Earl Pearson got that $30,000, he fathered a second son. He divorced his wife and he became an alcoholic vagrant. That's all it
Karma.
Says. Artie, her first boyfriend that moved to California with her, he became an assistant director on several different movies. He was widowed in 1969.
I think Artie was probably a decent guy.
Yeah. That was basically it. I left out a lot. I basically covered like maybe 2/3.
I mean, we just went on a roller coaster journey, Bianca. I don't know what much more you can do to me.
There was a whole lot that I did not cover. But Clara's life was wild, running wild.
See that her family that is still alive actually gave much praise to Taylor for her, bringing her to the forefront. Because
like I said, I didn't know who she was. Like, as you started talking about her, and more sounded familiar, especially like people she was associated with, like Gary Cooper and things like that. But, and it does sound extremely similar to the Evelyn Hugo book, which is a fictional story that is fantastic. And I do highly recommend anyone read, but it's just, it's a lot, but I did see that they did give Taylor a lot of praise for the song that she created, Clairbo.
Oh, good. I'm glad. So yeah, that's the story of Clairbo. Go pick up the biography. It's called Clairbo Running Wild by David Sten.
Because clearly there's more folks. I don't know.
There is.
Handle more, but
I finished this book, and when I finished it, I literally had a tear coming out of my eye because it was just, it was a lot.
Gunder and I and car crashes. I thought that was intense, but I mean.
But I highly recommend this book. It was very good. And just, I didn't read a lot of the quotes that Clara said. Clara was very funny. She had a great sense of humor. Miranda, I think you're muted or something.
I'm not muted. I don't know what to say.
Oh, okay.
I'm over here looking at my Gunter book, and I was like, it's okay, buddy. I was like petting the cover, and I was like, you're good too. You're funny too. You're good. It's okay.
Okay. Well, now that we've gone over that.
Did you read anything else? Because this is pretty intense. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. What else have you read this month or acquired this month?
I can normally read a book in like 3 or 4 days. This one took me over a week. Like, it was intense, but it was so good. We'll go with my current read is Guardians of Dawn, Zara by S.J. Jones.
Is that this screenshot you sent me and the girls?
Yes, that was like the dedication page. Mm-hmm. It says, for all the besties who read fan fiction printouts in the bathtub instead of doing their math homework.
Hey!
But this is supposed to be an Eastern take on Cinderella.
Ooh.
It's YA. And I'm about 30 pages in, mm-hmm. and the first 30 pages are really good, so I'm excited for this book. Nice. Two books that I picked up. I went to my local independent bookstore for Independent Bookstore Day. That was that 2 weeks ago? A fortnight.
Oh my God, you're killing me.
But I picked up The Lost Bookshop by Evie Woods. Mm-hmm. It says, how far will you go to find your story? And mm-hmm. it's about this bookshop that will just randomly appear to these three women. And it's supposed to give them what they need in that time. So I'm excited to get to that.
I like the idea of that. Like this, you walk into the bookshop and it tells you exactly what you're going to read.
Yes. And then the only other one that I've got was a pre-order. It's A Whisper in the Walls by Scott Reintgen. This is the sequel to, my mind just went completely blank. Hold on. It's part of the Waxway series. This is book number two. What was book number one? A Door in the Dark. That was one of my top reads last year. I gave it 5 stars. That was the one that I would describe if you put Hermione in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
It's that series. So this is the sequel, and I plan to get to it. It'll probably be not the next book I read, because the next book I read is going to be our podcast book, but the one after that.
Gotcha.
But that's all I've been up to. What have you been up to?
Not much. I think I'm in a slump.
No.
Yeah, I think I'm in a slump. I did finish 6 books last month. No, hang on. Not all these count for last month. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I finished 5 books last month. And technically, it's the 6th. And I finished 2 books this month.
Yeah.
But I just feel like I'm in a slump.
Yeah. Is I read 4 books last month, but they were thickums.
Mine weren't.
Like the Clara Bow one.
No, I think...
Yeah. For some reason, I've been picking up tomes this year. I don't know why.
You do this. You do this where every so often, all you read are like giants. Most of mine have been in the 350 pages or
That's
less.
That's pretty normal. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm at 260, 350. That's where I'm at. But I feel like I'm just in like a slump. So I did purchase a whole list that I will not break out. Follow us on TikTok. I laid out a few of them for all of the multiple Stuff Your Kindle days that we had this past month. There's a Stuff Your Earbuds Day coming here in the next... It should come up before this episode airs, but there's a Stuff Your Earbuds Day coming that I'll post about too, but I grabbed a bunch of stuff. But the things that I have actually read since we last met, so there's an author that I have mentioned here before that I really enjoy. I consider her like cozy paranormal, and it's like mystery with dash of romance that's closed door. I recommended this to one of our friends in group the other day. It's Kristen Painter, and she does she has a fictional world set called Nocturne Falls, where everyone that lives there is like a gargoyle or a ghoul or a vampire, or, and what's so cool is tourists come to this town to do like Halloween-y type stuff all the time, like year round, but not realizing that like the vampire that's doing the vampire tour really is. They think it's just some dude in costume. Which side note to that, it is really funny because they do this like ostentatious costume and that's not them every day. They're like normal people, but they're vampires every day. But they're like, they're kind of cozy mystery fantasy. And she has a series that kind of is like a leg off. I wouldn't necessarily say a spinoff, but it's like set in the same universe, but it's like a whole different, only some people crisscross. And it's called Frost and Crow Mystery. And I finished the first two of them and I bought them as well because I didn't know that I didn't have them. And I really enjoyed those. Those are really fun. There's talking cats, and one guy's a necromancer, and Jane, one of the other main characters, is a winter elf. So it's a lot of fun. They're just like, I don't want to use the words unrealistic because it's fiction, so duh. but I think you know what I'm trying to say. Where it just takes you from this world.
Yeah.
But it's set in this world. Like it's, like in the one book, they're in Vegas, and then they're in Nocturne Falls in one of the books, and then they're in Nashville in one of them. So I did acquire and read. I acquired all 3 books, but have only read 2. And she does plan to come out with more. And then I bought them, but I haven't started pre-ordering. But do you remember me talking about the witch books that I loved so much? It was like the Witch's Knitting Club or Vampire Knitting Club. That's what
it was.
The
Vampire Knitting Club, yeah.
Nancy announced that she's writing more in that series.
Yay!
Yeah, she just announced like last week that she was writing more in that series. And I was so excited. So technically I haven't acquired those, but I just had to put that out there. And then I just bought? It was a pre-order and I forgot I pre-ordered it. And you know, I've been super excited about this. I've only talked about it like a gajillion times. Geneva Rose, Home is Where the Bodies Are. I actually, I'm going to start it next. I'm currently, like I said, I'm doing that book 3 of the Frost and Crow.
Yeah.
But that one, I'll be done with it tomorrow. They're short. And then on to Home is Where the Bodies Are. I'm very excited about this.
I think you're going to like it because I gave it 3 stars. So if I give it 3 stars, I know you're going to love it.
Yeah. And I know her books are hit or miss for you. And I usually tend to like them more than you do. So, and I did purchase, after our discussion last month, I did purchase The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo.
Woohoo!
I did. So I think if everything works out the way my brain will allow it to, I'm finishing Mystified in Music City. I'm going to move on to Home is Where the Bodies Are, and then The Familiar is going to happen.
Yay!
I technically acquired all of those, but I used Kindle credit, or I used Kindle, like, people had gotten me Amazon money.
Yeah.
I can't use Amazon.com money in check. So yeah. I got Kindle books. So I basically didn't spend any money. And then the other were Audible credits. So I was like, woohoo, free. Girl math, it's free.
Well, if you want to see what else we are up to, you can follow us on Instagram. We are Bells with Books Podcast. Mm-hmm. Also follow us on the TikTok. We are also Bells with Books Podcast over there as well. Yep. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Stylin' Freak. You can follow Miranda. She's at Mom's a Nerd pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere that people are allowed to follow me.
Yeah. And then what's going on the podcast feed?
Lots of stuff that's very vague. But as you know, we are home to a multitude of different types of podcasts here on the feed. So I believe we have some special editions of Jukebox, the Daily Jukebox podcast that comes out. We have new Disney podcast is coming out. Lady in the Beard is back. Muppets should be back soon. We also have My Brain is Dead and I Own This Feed. We got a lot of stuff, and there's something for everyone here. I really tell people all the time that if you come to the Place to Be Nation Pop Experience feed and you can't find something for you, well, then you're not fun. So, of course, we have the Facebook group as well, Place to Be group. That is made up of people because we have a couple of different feeds that we all, like, we call them, like, sibling feeds, so to speak. So we do have the Place to Be group. Where people are, there's a tournament coming up soon. It's going to be cartoons. So they're trying to figure out what is the best cartoon. And I think it's like predominantly like cartoons of our youth. So yes, there are going to be some more adult cartoons on there, but it's like things that we were all watching as kids and maybe we shouldn't have been watching it. But the tournaments are always a lot of fun. So come join us and do that over there. Please. I know people get tired of other podcasters and YouTubers and whatever saying this, but it means a lot for you to leave a review. Even if you don't listen to all the podcasts on the feed, even if you're here because of ours, if you could subscribe, leave a review, even follow us on, you know, TikTok or Instagram, just let us know that you're there. It means a lot, and that's how actually our content gets push to other people, whether it are TikTok content, Instagram, the podcast itself, sharing it, liking it, writing a review pushes it, the algorithm, to the peoples. So please, if you have a spare moment, even just a couple of seconds, to give us a little thumbs up on something, share it with your friends, like it. We would be very appreciative. And as Bianca said, go follow us on those socials. That is important as well. Of course, we love to hear what you're reading. We hope you've enjoyed what we have been reading. And always, just keep reading.